If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation DS9, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, I am sitting in a very hot room in the Echo Park neighborhood of Los Angeles, California. These are the waning days of my interregnum between having an apartment and I am really excited to have climate control back in my life.
Wow.
This sucks.
You guys do Airbnb with working air conditioning as an unchecked button in your search?
This one has air conditioning in the bedroom, but there's nowhere to sit and set up a computer in the bedroom.
Right.
So, they've all had AC, but this one is just particularly toasty in the parts that aren't the bedroom. So
when are you going to be doing pod from the brand new Bad Character Studios?
That will be not next episode, but the episode after. And I think
cool.
The first thing I will record in there, ideally, will be our super secret new project.
Right. More dark episodes.
How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Ben. It's the morning after I went to go see Friends of the Pod, the Doughboys, last night in Seattle.
Those guys are very funny and delightful.
Oh my God. They are so fucking funny. I was laughing my ass off.
It makes me jealous how funny they are.
I felt the same way seeing them do their show live so soon after we came off of our tour. Like, it's just fucking guys and mics and no audio-visual accompaniment at all. It was just wall-to-wall laughs. Just a great show. If they are touring near you, highest recommendation to go see the Doughboys.
I felt the same way, and then a few people whose opinion I really value told me that they thought we were really onto something with our live show.
Oh, that's good to hear.
I was out to drinks with Jordan and Jesse of Jordan Jesse Go and Dan Kennedy the other night, and Dan Kennedy made a point of saying that our live show was really amazing and hilarious to him, and he's never really watched Star Trek or listened to our show before.
That's huge. Dan Kennedy's a god in my country.
Yeah. Dan Kennedy's one of the greatest to ever do it. He's the host of the Moth Podcast, another great show.
Look at you relocating to LA and doing power lunches / power drinks with Jordan, Jesse, and Dan Kennedy. That's great, right? That's a soft landing for you over there.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing I thought was real funny about this Doughboy show, Ben, was that this was night two of a 3-night tour that they're doing, and they were feeling rugged. and I was like, oh my God, guys, it's only night two.
What is this, amateur hour?
Look, I mean, you and I got into some some competitive eating on our tour that, that had some ramifications. And by competitive sure. eating, I mean you competitively eating at me in an attempt to draw me into some sort of eating war that I was yeah. unwilling to participate in. But they do yeah. it professionally, man. And
you saw the tanks and planes of my consuming 4 pounds of nachos arrayed on the battlefield, and you packed up your sword and shield and ran for the hills.
I wanted peace at that. I wanted peace when I saw the entire sheet pan full of nachos that you took down in like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Only well, Ben could go to Nacho's sheet pan.
Those guys have a lot more stage time than us in their history, both right. having been, you know, in the Birthday Boys and being, you know, just regular denizens of UCB stages.
Yeah.
Near and far.
There's something to be said about natural comfort on stage, and that is them.
Yeah, but by the same token, their show is a far more self-destructive enterprise than ours. So,
Lordy,
I really don't
it.
Envy them that.
Not at all. I salute them, but I do not envy them.
Well, Adam, do you want to get into... This is actually... We should probably address this a little bit. And we're recording this before our Emissary episode goes out, so I'm sure we will have received numerous Facebooks and tweets and Reddit notes about how we have the order wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But the episode we're here to talk about today is Past Prologue, which was filmed second, which was filmed third, but aired second. And so I think some streaming platforms have them in filming order, and some streaming platforms have the episodes in air date order.
We're which is a thing that can be confusing, because I know I watch the show on Netflix, and on Netflix at least, the order has A Man Alone before Past yeah. Prologue. But for the purposes of the Greatest Generation program, we will be proceeding from airing order, which has Past Prologue coming first.
Right.
Let's do it, Ben. It's season 1, episode 2, Past Prologue. Ben, this episode sort of opens on an awkward first date between Dr. Bashir and a man we will come to know as Garrick.
A Cardassian by birth, obviously.
The lone Cardassian denizen of the station. It's a
real meat scary.
Yeah, Garrick deploys a sort of hostile politeness that seems really familiar to me. Like, I don't know if you know anyone like this, Ben, whose politeness is so off-putting and threatening.
Yes.
But this immediately makes Garrick into a threat for Bashir, and Bashir is super nervous about him.
Yeah, the politeness feels loaded.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you can hear Bashir dropping nuts and bolts in his chair.
There seems to be a sort of rainforest cafe setting where everyone takes their meals.
We got him trapped in Rainforest Cafe.
And the promenade, yeah. too. Like, it's, they're really trying to shine up this dump, and I'm not sure it's working. No one wants to take their lunch at their desk to save time at this point, that's for sure.
It's sort of the crunchy coffee shop that opens in a neighborhood that's getting gentrified, but that doesn't last 10 years into the gentrification.
Sure.
You know, it's like, this is a transitional white people restaurant, but not the final resting state of rich white assholes taking over a neighborhood.
I mean, Garrick will develop into a foundational character on this show. At this point, Bashir's paranoia is totally founded, but also, like, this just might be the way Garrick is, and there might not be any hostility meant at this point, but we're very much seeing this through Bashir's terrified eyes.
Yep.
Back on the bridge of the station, we see that Kira has had a little bit of a haircut after having Data hair. She's got season 3 Data hair in episode 3 of the show.
Yeah.
A little high and tight for Major Kira.
High and
Kira.
Tight. And I think that Nana Visitor actually suggested this. She's of the opinion that Kira was so kind of eye on the prize as a character that she probably wouldn't be doing an involved hairdo
right.
every time. And I think that's like a really insightful thing for an actor to choose. And, you know, I think there's so much pressure on women in Hollywood to be like extremely pretty in a very conventional way. And I think it's a very like cool and bold choice that she made with that.
I was surprised that they allowed her the latitude to make that kind of character decision in how she looked. And yeah. by surprised, I mean like pleasantly surprised. I think it's great that that they would allow her to bring that up and actually take it for action.
It's sort of amazing that the executive producer didn't want to take more advantage of what a pretty lady she is.
You know, speaking of that, my wife had an observation about the show because we've been watching this together so far, in that this is a show filled with good-looking actors, much more so than Star Trek The Next Generation, was her observation. I'm not sure I totally believe that, but so far, I suppose your feelings on that depend largely on if you think Colm Meaney is an attractive man. Ben, I have to say, I think I do. He's a good looking dude.
He's very fuckable.
But if you don't think Colm Meaney's good looking, then I think you would probably disagree with my wife's opinion.
Does your wife have a crush on Colm Meaney?
I think that's actually what she said. That's what she said without saying it, Ben.
Jesus. You don't look anything like Colm Meaney.
I know. Colm Meaney's the guy she told me not to worry about.
Colm Meaney, your wife's hall pass?
You know what? What a cool fucking hall pass that is. Like, talk about unconventional.
Yeah.
What are all these curly hairs doing around the house?
Are these pubes or what's going on?
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
They rescue this guy Tanalos from a Bajoran ship that's under attack by Cardassians.
Yeah, it's chasing the ship towards the station.
And it's like, it's one of those like make a break for the border things where if the Bajoran ship can get across the border into Mexico, then the Cardassians won't have any jurisdiction to continue the chase.
Right.
And so they get this guy aboard and immediately the Cardassians are like, you got to give us that guy. He's bad news bears. He's a criminal and we've got to charge him with some crimes.
This guy asks for asylum right away. He's like, look, man, these guys are chasing me. I want your asylum so I can be safe. And this puts Sisko in a little bit of a pickle.
Yeah, because the piece is still very fresh and new. I mean, we know from season 7 that the armistice and peace treaty between the Federation and the Cardassians is still fragile more than a year after these events take place. So, pissing off the guys with the warships parked on your border is probably not the easiest choice for Sisko to have to make.
Right. So Tanalos is a part of this Bajoran splinter group that is sort of painted as a terrorist organization.
It's sort of Hezbollah for blonde guys with super 90s haircuts.
Blezbollah?
What is that?
Blonde Hezbollah?
That is a strained portmanteau, if ever there was one, Adam.
All of my portmanteaus are strained.
And I have that looked at.
This guy has a little bit of a history with Kira. They are acting very familiar right away.
Yeah, he recognizes her when he pops up on the transporter pad, and she's got some feelings, man.
The whole relationship with Kira and Sisko from the first from the premiere episode has continued to now. Kira is popping off all the time.
You're not seriously considering handing Tana over to the Cardassians.
She is still undermining Sisko at every turn. And this is a real problem, especially in this episode, because she is inserting herself into this conflict because this guy and her are buds. And the question I have for you at this point, Ben, is the show's depiction of women up to this point better or worse than it was in Star Trek The Next Generation? Star Trek The Next Generation famously treated its women characters as potted plants and background characters, but Kira so far is pegging the needle in the other direction in terms of like recklessness and loudness and like undermining a sort of command structure. Is that better or worse?
I'd say it would be pretty hard to be worse.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting take, which I hadn't really considered, that like the like going so hard in the opposite direction has made her into like an irrational nag, which is not necessarily a flattering thing either. But I feel like both Kira and Dax have like three dimensions to their characters already. Yeah. And that's already got this show off to a better start.
Sure. I tell you what I really didn't like was Sisko putting his hands on her on the promenade. What the fuck, Sisko?
What did he do?
He like grabbed her by the arm and flung her around and he's like, "Don't you fucking tell me what to do with this ton of low sky. Like fall in line and follow me or whatever." Like,
oh man.
Yeah, it was a little disturbing.
I missed that part. Yeah. I must have been looking at my phone.
Sure.
What are we doing here?
So the main conflict of the episode is like what to do about this guy. This guy has promised that he's not going to blow shit up anymore. He's not going to be a terrorist. He wants the asylum.
And he also has some evidence of like having been very badly Picarded up by the Cardassians. I mean, he's got real gnarly injuries all over himself that are consistent with a Gulmaset treatment.
They sort of give him that Rambo from First Blood in the jail treatment. Like they take off his shirt and they're like, "Holy shit."
Yeah, they're hitting him with the hose from across the room.
David Caruso's like throwing up in the corner.
They're all doomed, Adam. They're all doomed.
You got Tana Loss on Deep Space Nine, you better just remember one thing. A good supply of body bags.
His relationship with the Major is not really one of old friends. Like they definitely encountered each other, and like the commander even asks Kira if she was ever a part of the Khon Ma, and she's like, "No, I was a freedom fighter, but I was never that extreme.
If I had been, I would not be working with the provisional government now."
It's very clear that they were like more similar in their goals than not back in the bad old days. But Tana's really like working the Major, like definitely playing her psychologically.
Yeah, for such a strong character up to this point, Kira is especially subject to his manipulations. In a way I found fairly disappointing, you know? Like, she is so headstrong and powerful as a character that, like, mm-hmm. this fucking blow-dry job, like, for him to be the one to get one up on her was sort of sad to me.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting tweak to the character that she's got this kind of soft spot.
Yeah. So Tana has sort of attracted the attention of Garrick, of all people. And during another Garrick-Bashir interaction over lunch, he's like, "You know, this Tana guy, not really that great of a dude, probably. I mean, I'm just guessing here. You know, what am I? I'm just a clothier, just a simple tailor, just talking to my new doctor buddy."
Is this a direct John Le Carré thing?
Oh, I don't know.
How he always has the tailors and spies in his books?
Oh, I don't know. I'm unfamiliar.
I mean, I haven't read any of it, but I know, you know, like the Tailor of Panama and Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy and all that is like, I don't know. I wish I knew more about it so I could understand whether that was an intentional thing.
Is that a no?
So at this point in the episode, we start to realize that Garrick is sort of an intelligence asset for the station that Odo isn't even at this point. Like, Lursa and Bator show up.
Klingons have an odd sense of style, don't you agree?
And Garrick's got, like, the angle on all of it. Like, he sees them, he lays back in the cut and he sees them talking, and then he sees Tana talk to other blonde Hezbollah people and is like putting the pieces together, and he's sort of like telling but not telling Bashir what he thinks is happening, and Bashir is just so fucking dumb. He is so dumb in this episode, like willfully stupid and scared, because every time he talks to Garrick, he goes right back up to the bridge and talks to Sisko, and he's like,
I need some guidance.
Yes, Doctor.
Commander, this Garrick guy is creeping me out. He's telling me I need to get a new wardrobe. I need to show up at a shop at a specific time. Lursa and Bator are here. They kind of scare me as people.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really know what to do. And Sisko, not having been in on the conversation at all, is like, go get a suit. It's obvious this is code for something.
But I think that's such a fun character trait for Bashir to have, like sucking ass at subterfuge. It's
yeah.
Like so on brand, given the like brief glimpses we've gotten of him already, which is like, you know, asking for a date before he's introduced himself to his new boss.
He's truly, you know, the buffoon of the series at this
yeah.
point.
It's fun for that to be the Doctor.
Yeah.
Like, in a weird way, he's got the job of having Riker-like swagger, but also having like data-like ineptitude.
Yeah, like what if Commander Riker were an idiot and a coward? That's what Bashir is at this point.
Yeah, it's like me, you know, in a lot of ways. I identify with this character more than anyone. I never pick up on anything, Adam. So Tana has, like, he's gotten provisional asylum mm-hmm. because the, you know, the Cardassians are going to come aboard to, like, make their case or whatever, but the commander is really holding shit up for them and making sure that every little regulation is followed before they're actually allowed onto the thing. And he starts going around, and he's like less a terrorist guy than, like, a UKIP MAGA type guy. He's like Nigel Farage of Bajorans. He's like, I don't want any humans or Cardassians or shapeshifters or anybody not Bajoran on this station or on Bajor. I want them all gone. I don't care what it costs us to make that happen. He's like a total xenophobe. And that really starts to drive a wedge between him and Kira.
When you're a blonde-haired, blue-eyed xenophobe, all sorts of things come to mind, Finn.
Really? Like what?
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll think of
that
something.
That was an incomplete thought.
Yeah, well, when we come up with some blonde-haired, blue-eyed xenophobe ideas, we can edit them into the episode later. What do you say?
That sounds great.
Okay, cool. Yeah, Lursa and Bator coming onto the station was a real thrill for me.
Me too. I felt like they looked a lot different in their appearance, and the thing that I figured out...
I looked up to see if they were the same actors or not, because I felt the same way, but they are.
The reason they look so different is because they were never shot from below on TNG, and in Deep Space Nine, they're shot at, like, chest height or even below, and they look so different from that angle. I felt the same
really
way.
They really make the camera focus on the underboob.
Right, right. Yeah, they are both really rocking décolletage. A pretty major way. Like, Odo like subjects them to, like, you know, he takes their weapons away or whatever, but we know that Klingons have like pieces of weapons hidden in their boots and stuff. What do you think Lursa and Bator have under their boobs?
Yeah, do they really have the cup size that they're representing, or is there a lot of materiel in there?
We may never know.
Gul Dukat. What's going on here is Tana and Lursa and Bator are conducting some kind of nefarious secret trade, But Lyrsa and Bator are also in talks with Garrick about turning Tana over to the Cardassians for money.
We are not here to buy. We are here to sell.
So I think they're kind of trying to get paid twice on this job.
Yeah.
Where they get something from him that they want, but then they also fuck him over and get something, get some money from the Cardassians. They're like, they're feeling like they're out in the cold with no armies and no great house anymore, and they're trying to drum up money and equipment so that they can get out there and become the general purpose criminal element of the galaxy that they were born to be.
I have a hard time wrapping my mind around this deal that Tana's trying to set up with Lyrsa and Bator. Like, we know Tana's trying to purchase bomb-making material from them, but
right.
What
he
is...
He has, like, one half of a bomb, and he needs the other half from them.
I guess Lyrsa and Bator are in it for money. They say that much. Tana's in it for the bomb-making gear, but why would Tana ever work with Lyrsa and Bator? Like, that's how desperate he is. Like, Lyrsa and Bator can't have a great reputation in the galaxy, right? Like, they're known fugitives. They are really bad people. And Tana thinks he's badass enough to take them on? Tana, who doesn't really have a ship anymore, that Bajoran ship was no match for the Cardassian ships. Like, what does he think he's going to fight back with against a Klingon bird of prey? Like, he's in way over his head.
Yeah,
he's sort
he really
of bad
is.
At this.
He's not great. The last note that I wrote at the end of watching this episode is, spoiler alert, Tana kind of sucked at his job.
Yeah, he really does.
But it's also complicated by what a racist he is. Like, the fact that he needs aliens to help him complete his project of dismissing all the aliens from the station is bonkers.
Racism is just a bad motivation for any action, and it leaves you subject to making some really bad decisions. That's what we learned here.
Thank you. It's really powerful.
I'm just trying to help, Ben.
So there's a fun scene where Bashir is like in the dressing room listening through the drapes as Garrick and Lyrsa and Bator haggle over a price for Tana Los's head.
Let us haggle.
And that's where we get the kind of final confirmation that Garrick is more than he appears to be.
I am no more than what I seem to be.
He is making negotiations on behalf of the Cardassian government, which makes him a character, you know, like knowing that going forward, a character that everybody in the Starfleet portion of Deep Space Nine has to be really careful about.
Right. He's the sort of deal maker that you might expect Quark to be, but he isn't, you know? Like, this Garrick guy is a wheeler dealer in a way that no one else is.
He out-quarks Quark every time.
During this investigation, Kira has a little bit of a professional and personal breakdown and goes into Odo's office for some counseling. Odo basically describes her problem to her, and Kira realizes that she's sort of between a rock and a hard place, right? Like, she can either help Tana and put aside her weird feelings about whether or not Tana is acting for good, or not follow Tana and be painted as some sort of traitor to her people. And this is something that she's struggling with a ton. And Odo basically tells her, like, you know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. But, like, this Tana guy is going to be bad no matter what you do. Like, there's really... You can't change this guy. And that was what I got out of that conversation. But another thing I got out of it was just how close Odo and Kira are. Like, they're more than just professional friends. Like, they are counselors to each other.
I think that that's something that there was more of in seasons 1 and 2 of TNG and less of in later seasons, like seeing people sub the captain, like, bounce things off each other for moral and professional support.
Yeah, I think so too. It's
like it always seemed like the captain had to get involved if Worf was having like a work problem.
Like,
you know,
you don't need to have a counselor figure on this show if you just have people being good friends to each other, because that is like one of the roles of friendship, professional or otherwise.
Yeah, and I agree, Adam.
We're really clipping these tangents.
Mm-hmm. You don't need a tangent. That's not what this show's about.
Odo does a really fun bit of investigation wherein he turns himself into a rat and spies on a conversation that Lursa, Bator, and Tana have. Ben, the question I have for you at this point about Odo is like, how is it that he has a certain mass as a person? He has certain mass as a liquid, but then he can become less massive as a rat. Is that rat like, does that rat have a density that is many times the density of a normal rat? Like, does that rat weigh 200 pounds?
If that rat flew through the air and kicked you, it would knock you across the room.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't understand how Odo works physically.
Yeah.
When he does the transformation, I hope that's something we figure out a little bit more about. Because that would be fun if, like, he became an ant with human strength.
Because doesn't he also become a bag at some point?
Yeah, like, yeah, a bag that people put gold into.
And they carry it around, so it's no big deal. So Odo not only has the power to change shape, but also how much he weighs, which that's pretty great, you know?
Yeah, that totally contradicts the idea of a totally massive rat, like a heavy rat, because if he was a heavy rat before, he'd have to be a heavy bag later. And Cork was carrying that bag like it was just any other bag.
Or are Ferengi's super, super strong, and he didn't notice that it was a very heavy bag. I feel like we'd know if Ferengis were super strong.
That they should have established that from the start. That would have been great.
Yeah, they have these whips, and they walk funny, and they
have super
strength.
Don't
know their own strength.
Yeah.
They have Lenny from Of Mice and Men level strength.
They're always accidentally tearing the clothes off of women. They just don't know their own strength.
Whoops.
Just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had a chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
Tana negotiates with Kira for a shuttle. He's like, look, I have the secret to this whole thing. I can bring peace to the quadrant. We can end this war. We can end our hostilities between each other. We can get these Federation people off our backs. Wouldn't that be great? All you have to do is procure a runabout so we can go on a mission I can't tell you anything about. And Kira fucking does it.
Yeah, well, she has talked the... She's like, basically talked the commander into, we need to see what his ultimate plan is, and the only way we're going to do that is if we give him a shuttle. And not only do we give him a shuttle, but I need to go with him.
We have to give them the runabout.
Agreed.
And I have to be on it.
Not agreed, Major.
So this is the first big test of Sisko's trust that Kira is not a terrorist, like she seems like she might be.
It's an imperfect plan, because you know what the perfect plan is, Ben? Is if Odo became Kira and went on that mission.
But he can't. I think that's like a limitation. Like, he can't do the nose.
Oh, that's so fucked.
he's great at being a rat, but he sucks at being a humanoid.
Well, that's too bad.
He is flawlessly good at being a rat.
That really stops a lot of storylines before they start, huh?
It really does.
Very limiting.
It would be really fun if he was as bad at being other objects as he was at being a humanoid. So, like, you know, somebody would walk in and there would be like a radio in the corner, but it would look like the radio was made out of like sculpy clay.
I wonder if he hangs out on the promenade as ships come in just looking for people with shitty noses. He's like, I could be that guy.
Oh, that Morn guy, I could nail that.
Look at that guy's awful nose.
Owen Wilson. I'm in.
I could be Barry Manilow.
Yeah. Alice Cooper, I could be that guy.
Do you think anyone on the station's heard of Barbara Streisand? He's Steve Martin from Roxanne.
Quite a hood ornament you got there, pal.
So Tana and Kira are on the runabout, and it's at this point Tana discloses what's going on when this Klingon bird of prey appears. Kira starts piecing together what's going on. There's a deal here. There's a deal for bomb-making supplies. Kira's not happy about it because she's party to it now.
She's had this moral quandary the entire time of like not wanting to support what he's been up to. And it really lacked... It really lacked impact for me because, you know, we just assume because it's Lursa and Bator that what he's up to is really bad.
Mm-hmm.
But because she doesn't know, it feels like really flimsy in the script. Like the script doesn't have the conviction of giving her a real, like a tangible choice that she has to make.
Nor do the other characters really allow her the sort of latitude to act on her own, because Sisko and Dax have tailed them in a runabout of their own, only their runabout has a roll bar on it. Sort of a sporty runabout.
They have three runabouts on the station. They're all named after rivers, and they all have like slightly different aftermarket modifications. Like one is lowered, one has ground effects, one has a huge spoiler and a bunch of window decals. And the one with the huge spoiler is kind of tailing the one that Kira and Tana are on, making sure that they never get into too much trouble.
So once the deal gets made, it's sort of a race back to the station and the wormhole. Like, Tana's sort of making this up on the fly. He realizes that they're being tailed, not only by Dax and Sisko, but by a Cardassian ship. None of them are really close enough to overtake them in terms of speed. And so Tana's ordering Kira to take the runabout back to the station and then to the wormhole. And Kira's like, you're going to fucking blow up the station? You can't do that. And Tana's like, no way. I got other plans. I'm going to blow up the wormhole. And Kira's like, you can't do that either. You're going to spread this radiation all over the place. So Kira, in a great moment in wheelman history, like sort of jerks the wheel to the side toward the wormhole at full speed. They sort of like hit three-wheel motion into the wormhole. And they do a little bit of Star Trek fighting while Tana is off balance.
Yeah, it's good times. It's I don't think the first time we've seen somebody use an evasive maneuver in a shuttle to knock somebody off their feet, but it's a lot of fun. And Tana's like desperately trying to get the launch controls going for his bomb, and she's desperately trying to like pull him away from it, but he gets to it, but it's too late. They're through the wormhole. It fires the bomb, and it just goes off into space and explode out there without harming anything. Is it going to irradiate the gamma quadrant?
It's hard to tell because no one talks about the consequences of this thing blowing up such a short distance from the other side of this thing. But, I mean, if it's as dangerous to explode on the station side of the wormhole, it has to be just as bad on the other side of it.
Or is it blowing up the wormhole that would have made the radiation?
I don't know, dude. I don't think anyone's concerned about that. So that I'm not going to be either.
Yeah. Well, Bajor really had a great opportunity there, but the path to another world just turned into a Superfund site, so bad news for us. Like, the idea that Tana would be, like, hailed as a hero of the people for doing that is so fucking crazy.
Yeah.
He's a real madman.
He's a madman and an idiot.
It's amazing that he sees reason when Sisko is like, hey, dude, you can either turn yourself in or we'll let the Cardassians blow you up.
Right, right. Yeah, so Sisko and Dax sort of pull their police cruiser in front of the other runabout and take Tana into custody, yeah?
Yep.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that, which longer
Yeah, he gets arrested. Calls Kira a traitor.
One day you'll understand.
A traitor.
Which is a real punch to the gut for her. It's like the main way to insult her is to say that she's insufficiently pro-Bajor.
Do you think it hurt more to receive an open-handed punch to the face from Tana or to be called a traitor by Tana?
Kind of even money.
Yeah.
I'm going to say.
I think so too.
Man, the Cardassians really did not observe ADA compliance when they built DS9. Every doorway has like a step over. The halls all have bars across the floor.
It's really submarine like in terms of its little I don't know what are those aren't portholes, but like the doors with raised rims around them.
Yeah, they're like gear looking doors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really really an accessibility nightmare, this station.
We sort of end the episode on a sad note with Major Kira's mixed feelings about her role in the ongoing Bajoran struggle for independence. That's the note we end on.
Yeah.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
I kind of liked it. It's definitely a better second episode than TNG had, which is not like the standard I think we should hold these up to by. Like, is this a better season 5 episode 4 than... But
yeah.
For second episodes, I think there's a special consideration because you've kind of gone through the work of introducing all the characters, and now it's like, let's throw an adventure at them that doesn't have anything to do necessarily with the like main plot of the series. And I think it's an interesting story. And if Tana had been... I think the two things that kind of like knock against this for me are that Tana is bad at what he's doing. Like, he is not a capable villain. And also that Kira is not really torn in two directions ever. Like, it's sort of presented as though she might get into a moral quandary, but she never really is. Like, she never really believes in his cause.
Right, right. And I think for there to be true stakes in this episode, she has to in a more credible way that she doesn't quite pull off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It's nice to get a second episode in the series that tosses us right into what it's like to be in this part of the universe, which is going to involve most of the time policing these two sides. Like, that's what life is going to be in this sort of uneasy truce state that they're in. So it was neat to get one of those right off the bat.
Yeah, and like a pretty interesting and generally well drawn one, you know.
Right.
And also fun to have some corny Klingon bullshit going on.
Yeah, I mean, the more characters from TNG that show up in the show, the more I really crave those moments. I mean, I'm sure they will be more and more fleeting as we go, but those are nice things to hang on to. It's helping with my transition into this show. Lursa and Bator's breasts help my transition into the show quite a bit, actually.
Easing yourself into the Deep Space Nine hot tub.
Ben, do we have any Priority One messages?
Oh, we surely do, Adam.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, our first Priority One message is from Theo, and it's for Kurt. It goes like this. Last year, my husband Kurt wrote you just after our son Sagan was born. Sagan is about to turn one, and Kurt's parental leave is coming to an end. Long walks with Sagan while his dad listens to The Greatest Generation will carry on, of course. Kurt, you are a wonderful husband and a wonderful father. Lots of love from your wife, Theo.
Wow.
Aww.
Little Sagan has been alive for the... there's not been a day that Sagan's been alive that The Greatest Generation hasn't been a thing.
what a kid. Cloud to grow up under.
That's amazing.
Wow, what a touching note, Theo. So cool that Kurt was able to spend a very long paternity leave like that.
Yeah, no kidding. Jeez. Very fortunate.
Yeah.
Ben, our second priority one message is from John from Philadelphia. It is to Ben and Adam. I think that refers to us. Message goes like this. Hey, guys. I just want to say thanks and great job on your tour. Caught the first half of the Philly show, but missed the end because I brought my wife. Anyways, thanks for all you do.
Oh, no.
John, that was such a perfect way to say that.
We walked someone?
Wow.
Man, the Philly show was probably our least full room.
Maybe,
I can't believe we walked someone.
Maybe John's wife got food poisoning and it didn't have anything to do with us at all. Because it was sort of like, the Philly show was like the sort of dinner theater show. Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. The venue and our tour booking folks got their wires crossed a little bit and they set it up like a dinner cabaret rather than a comedy show.
Right.
So it had a weird feel to it. But
people were expecting us to joust as they ate their Cornish game hens.
Yeah. I am sorry if we offended your wife. But I feel like it was maybe worth it for that P1.
Hey, John, thanks for trying.
Our apologies. If you'd like to send a priority one message, you can do that, and it's a fun way to get your message in front of thousands of viewers, but also a way to support the program. You just go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200, and they support this show.
Thanks, guys.
Tomok Angelad at Tanagra.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have and their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it. And I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures every time you send one to it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I sure did, Ben. I think for a couple of reasons. Reasons like leveraging her way into a different haircut and really just acting the shit out of everyone else around her. I'm going to give my Shimoda to Nana Visitor.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if Worf, or could you imagine if Michael Dorn told the makeup department, like, you know, I think I could go for a little less loaf in episode 2. I'm really not feeling the time I have to spend in makeup. And also, I think it would help me develop my character a little better. Like, Michael Dorn never did that, so he had 6 hours of makeup every day. Nana Visitor, yeah, like, successfully negotiated an episode 2 change in costuming and makeup, and totally pulled it off. So that was sort of a big balls move. And also, she acts so big in this episode. This is like a few episodes in a row now where I don't think anyone has told her that she's not the star of this show. And I think that's great.
Yeah.
I love it. And
keep believing that.
To me, like, no one's having more fun than her. She's getting haircuts. She's getting punched in the face and punching other people in the face. Like, she's having a great time, clearly. So, Nana Visitor for me.
I feel like in this episode, she kind of is the star of the show.
Totally, yeah. What about you, Ben?
My drunk Shimoda is Garrick. For the reason that this character is written, I think, kind of badly. But I think the actor is Andrew Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Man, he is fun in this role.
Yeah.
Like, he has just got a shit ton of charisma, and it is really, really fun to watch him Garrick around. And I'm glad that he became sort of a regular figure on this show.
A lesser actor would have fucked this up, really, because everything he's doing isn't on the page, you know?
Yeah.
You get a guy over smarming the Garrick role, and it's just cheesy and bad. But this actor really plays it perfectly.
Yeah.
And he's really, like, very early on in the series, like, a favorite character right now. I want more of him.
Yeah. He has definitely not lost track of how many times Dirty Harry fired his gun.
Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine is Season 1, Episode 3, A Man Alone. Odo must prove his innocence when a known enemy of his is found brutally murdered in a hollow suite.
Oh, that sounds like fun. A hollow anything isn't a frequent setting for a murder.
No. And this is this sounding like a Star Trek is a place.
Yeah, I think
does
the same
not
thing. Yeah. I mean, what if the show was just Murder of the Week? Real Law and Order Star Trek. That could be great.
That could be really fun. Well, that's what we'll be watching next time. Have we talked at all about what our plan is? Are we going to try and replace Vitos with something else in this edition of The Greatest Generation, Adam?
Oh, I don't know, Ben. I am so unfamiliar with this show that I think to have a veto would be a totally irresponsible thing to use.
Right.
So, to be honest, I'd be in favor of not having vetoes at all, but I'm sort of feeling like we need something sporting.
We need something that we can fuck with each other about. Yeah. I don't think it can be next episode related, though, because we're gonna both have problems remembering whether this is an episode or not that we want to veto.
Well, we're both creative people. Maybe we'll come up with something as we go.
Maybe somebody will suggest something that we really like.
No shortage of suggestions out there. That's for sure. Also, no shortage of the amount of support we receive from the show. Those interested in supporting its ongoing production could go to MaximumFun.org/donate. Those donations keep the show alive, Ben. We've also got some merch on the website, on the Topatico site. Got some glasses and t-shirts. Really great stuff. And more on the way.
We recently put up the poster and challenge coins from our last tour because we had a few extra of each. So if you missed the tour or want to get some of that merch, you can get some of that merch.
Discussions on the show and any other show in the Greatest Gen universe happen all the time over on Facebook and Reddit, where those places are easily searchable, r/GreatestGen, and we got a Facebook page and a group over there too. Fun times.
You can use the hashtag GreatestGen to discuss the show on Twitter. Adam is on there as @CutForTime, and I'm on there as @BenjaminRAHR. We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for our theme music tweak and a lot of the other music you hear on the show. And with that,
I end the show's now, Ben.
Oh.
Look at me. I'm the show ender now. And with that, there you have it. We hope you'll join us next time for another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and another episode of The Greatest Generation DS9 that's been accused of murder. And our alibi is a bucket.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.